This is a WATD Political Forum on 95.9 WATD. Online at 95.9WATD.com. Now, live from Studio B, here's your moderator, WATD's Christine James.
Good evening and thank you. Welcome to a WATD Political Forum. I'm Christine James, your moderator here in studio, asking questions with Monday night show host and reporter Kevin Tachi, along with our own Charles Mathewson. As we told you just moments ago, the race tonight is for the 12th Plymouth District, and that includes the towns of Kingston, Halifax, and Plympton, as well as Precincts 1, 11, and 13 in Plymouth, Precinct 1 in Duxbury, and Precinct 1 in Middleborough. Another factoid: that district covers 105 square miles and has approximately 40,000 registered voters. Now, in studio, we have the current incumbent, that's Democratic State Rep Tom Coulter. Good evening.
Good evening, Christine.
How are you? And his challenger, and that's the Republican Peter Bonsack. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Christine.
The general election is November 8th. It's a Tuesday, and if you're a regular listener, you know our format is simple. We always use the same one. We have asked the candidates to have prepared opening and closing statements ready, no longer than 2 minutes, and we have a round of questions from the reporters, a lightning round where answers are either yes or no or two sentences tops, and the closing statement can also be 2 minutes as well. If we have time, we will ask the candidates if they'd like to ask each other a question or two. Now, helping us time here, we have our own Amy Leonard in studio. Again, thank you. That's the lovely woman over there with the three pieces of construction paper. Thank you. Just like Vanna. Too bad this is radio. Red, green, and yellow. Red means stop. Green means go. Yellow means you've got 10 seconds. And if you go into the red zone more than 5 seconds, you get the bell, you're done. Remember, we can also turn your mic off. So we've got a tight format here, and we want to make sure that we try to keep answers under a minute. We pulled the names out of the official WATD newsroom koozie just moments ago, and the opening order will be Peter Bonsack, then we'll go to Tom Coulter, and that order is reversed at the end. So we say good evening and welcome to you folks, and let's begin with Peter Bonsack.
Hi, good evening. Thank you to Christine, Kevin, Charles, and Amy, keeping the time over there, and of course, WATD. Once again, I love how you guys allow everybody to come in here and talk and the forums that we have. But as I said, my name's Peter Bonsack. I'm not a politician. I'm just a veteran father and grandfather who is tired of what's going on that I don't like. I only get involved with things when I don't like what's going on. I can remember my father telling me a story when World War II broke out. He was 15 years old. He joined the service, and once they found out that he wasn't old enough, they kicked him out until he was old enough to jump back in. And the morals I bought from my father was, you know, you always work hard, you always be honest, and you always help out people when you can. And that's probably why I am the person I am today, because I care about a lot of things, and I personally don't like what's going on in the State House. I think it'd be running better if I was happy with it. I'd be up in my house in New Hampshire working on it right now. But to get more information about me, please go to my website, peterbonsack.com, or you can go to Facebook, Peter Bonsack for State Representative, and you'll be able to find all the information about me, some videos I have on there, everything else. So, and I still got the green, so I'm going to keep going. Like I said, I'm a father of three grown children, men, and I have six grandchildren with a seventh on the way. So one of many reasons why I like to see things change. And I'm an old school guy, and I like to see go back old school and start taking care of us before we take care of anybody else. Massachusetts and the country needs to start thinking about its own residents and the citizens of the United States. We need to take care of our own before we take care of anybody else. And I hope to see you on November 8th at the polls. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was Peter Bonsack, Republican. That was his opening comment. Now we're going to go to the incumbent, Democrat Tom Coulter. Good evening.
Good evening, Christine. And thank you to you and Kevin and Charles and Amy for hosting this political forum this evening. And thank you to you, Ed Perry, and the entire WATD team for all you do for the South Shore. I'm State Rep Tom Coulter, and I've been privileged to serve the citizens of this 12th Plymouth District for the past 10 years. The district includes towns of Kingston, Plympton, Halifax, and parts of Plymouth, Duxbury, and Middleborough. Before joining the legislature, I enjoyed a successful business career. I'm a graduate of North Adams State College, and I earned an MBA from Northeastern University. Because of my private sector experience and my role as a college professor, the Speaker of the House assigned me to the Joint Legislative Committees on Economic and Workforce Development, Small Business, and Higher Education. I am pleased to report to you this evening that the Commonwealth is on solid footing with a AA-plus bond rating, over $1 billion in our reserve fund, and a balanced budget. Under the strong leadership of Governor Baker, our unemployment rate is as low as it's at its lowest point in more than a decade. But I know that a great deal needs to still be done. Public service is in my DNA. I served in the Kingston Finance Committee and on the Silver Lake Regional School Committee before joining the legislature. My late parents were community leaders in the small town of Avon. My father's three brothers were all Catholic priests, two of whom served gallantly in Vietnam as Army chaplains. I've been blessed with three extraordinary adult children and five beautiful grandsons. Because of them, I'm reminded each day that our children are always listening and always learning. The work we do every day and the way we conduct ourselves as elected officials will affect generations to come. The views of my constituents have shaped my legislative agenda and enriched my life. With your guidance, I've taken thousands of votes and I'm proud of my voting record. Each one of those votes required careful study, active listening, and honest deliberation. Tonight, I look forward to a spirited and fact-based debate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement from Tom Coulter. He's a Democrat and he is the incumbent. Now we're going to go to questions, and we're going to begin with our own Kevin Tachi. Questions for the candidates.
Thank you, Christine. The drought in the region is that this region has been experiencing has made the use and mismanagement of Silver Lake by the city of Brockton an important issue. Going into the new legislative session, what will your goals be to protect this valuable resource? We'll start with you, Tom.
For me, Peter? Kevin, I'm sorry. Well, as you know, I've been on the show several times talking about Monpont Pond. This legislation was passed 100 years ago that allowed Brockton to tap into Silver Lake. And in 1964, that allowed Brockton to use Monpont Pond as a supplemental source. Brockton has not been respectful of that privilege. And I have reenacted the Central Plymouth Water Commission. It's now a very active board. And I've been working with them on dozens of meetings, as Charles knows. He attends them all. And we're working closely with DEP to negotiate an administrative consent order with Brockton that'll get them to follow the law. If they don't follow the law, I have made it crystal clear that I will file legislation, the same format that was used 100 years to give them the privilege, to take that privilege away and require that they hook up to the MWRA.
Same question to you, Peter. Give me your thoughts on the mismanagement of Silver Lake by the city of Brockton and any legislative action that you would take. What would your goals be in regards to protecting the resource?
Well, you know, my goals would be to get it solved next year. All right. It's been going on long enough, over 3 years in the 12th district before it was redistricted and prior to that. So it's been around a long time. But one of the things, you know, that I like to say is that the towns of Kingston and the town of Halifax do not own the water, do not own the ponds or the lakes, whatever you want to call them. State of Massachusetts owns them. And I have a big problem where the state is making the towns pay for all the tests, anything to be done with it. The state's not involved. This should be a state issue, state paid thing. So that's one of the things I would like to probably talk about more so with the residents and start going into the state house and taking up some action on that part to see the state. Why isn't the state getting more involved other than DEP?
Okay.
I think he might have a follow-up. Yeah, just, I don't know if you want to let him.
Okay. Just very briefly, a piece of information, Peter, perhaps you're not aware of. The state is actively involved in funding. We received over $100,000 in the budget this year for treatment. The Central Plymouth Water Commission is funded with the money needed to do testing. The state has been actively involved. DEP recently got involved at my request, but the monies are flowing from the state of Massachusetts to the town of Halifax.
Peter?
Yeah, well, you know, again, why I see it, if you own a piece of property, something's wrong with it, it's your responsibility. They may have money coming in now at $100,000 here and that. It should be the full responsibility of the state of Massachusetts, just like any other body of water, and it should be taken care of by the whole state where everybody pays, not just the towns around it.
Okay. Do you want any follow-up questions, Kevin?
No.
All right, let's go to Charles Matthews and questions for our candidates.
Guys, you each tout experience as a small business owner and that it gives you a unique perspective on economic development. Peter, specifically, you call for fixing the freelancing law. What is it? Who does it affect? And why does it need fixing?
I'm not aware of the freelancing law.
Neither am I, but it's on your website. State, I will fix the freelancing law. Caught my attention because I'm a freelancer.
I honestly don't. I put everything on my website itself, and I don't remember putting anything on there of saying freelancing. As a subcontractor, you might be considered as a subcontractor. I don't know.
Okay, well, talk about subcontracting. Is there a law, and does it need fixing?
Well, you know, obviously, they're paid by 1099. You know, subcontracts are paid by 1099. You know, they use it, they offset their taxes for what they're using. But, I mean, as a small business owner myself, I had a trucking company back in 1995 to 2004, where I started from nothing at all, zero money, everything. I grew it into 5 years, was doing $2.5 million revenue a year. I had 14 people working for me, a large amount of equipment. The day of 9/11, I was driving back from New Jersey, and we were shut down for 2 weeks because I was doing international air freight. And next, you know, the rules and regulations were changed, and my customers came to me and says, "You need to cut your rates in half." After I haven't raised them in 10 years, so I wound up selling it at the end of 2003.
Okay, well, Tom, you say, quote, on your website, quote, "Sustainable economic development requires prudent regulatory involvement." What does that mean?
It means we've got to get rid of outdated and archaic regulations. Governor Patrick started that process. Governor Baker is continuing in that process. I was both a small business and a large business owner, and I can tell you more than anything else, regulations are what dragged our growth down. But while I still have time, if you look at the recent article in Governing Magazine in August of 2016, they rated Massachusetts as the best among all states in economic development. And they based that on the unemployment rate, which is now the lowest it's been in 15 years at 3.9%. They based it on per capita GDP, per capita income, and on the percent change year over year. We have a great deal of work to do, particularly as it relates to economic development, workforce development, and higher education. Until we understand those three silos and are able to integrate them so that they don't operate independently, then we'll continue to create good-paying jobs but not have the students to fill those jobs. So perhaps we could talk about more about that later.
Okay, I saw Peter nodding when regulation came up, the concept of regulation. You believe that there should be, I'm assuming, less regulation of small business?
Oh, without a doubt. I agree with Tom on this. I can remember back, I've been involved in trucking for over 40 years, and I can remember when it was regulated, it was the person who did the best job. When it was regulated by the government, it was the person who did the best job got the job. If when it was deregulated, basically, hey, do what you want. There needs to have something, of course, but it was now whoever does the cheapest gets the job. That's why you see trucks out here on the road that shouldn't be in somebody's backyard, and they're on the road driving, which is dangerous. So, but to get back to regulation, yes, we need less restrictive regulations, less permits, fees, everything else. That's what's stifling the businesses.
And Tom, you're nodding. Yeah, we need less regulation. I assume both of you mean for small business. What about for large businesses?
Well, I think we need less regulation for all business. Now, don't misinterpret that as we don't need regulation. We let the banking industry go unregulated, or the federal government let the banking industry go unregulated for many years, and it put this country on the brink of financial ruin. So we do need regulations, but there are regulations still in Massachusetts that deal with cart paths, that deal with zoning bylaws, that deal with cows and put cows over the importance of people. And Governor Patrick and Governor Baker both have made this a priority because those regulations do get in the way of commerce and they do get in the way of economic development and they do need to be extinguished. Some argue the blue laws get in the way of economic development and should be reconsidered over and over and over again. As times change, we have to change. Regulations regarding the internet need to change, and old ones need to come off the books as technology changes.
We could go on and on.
We could.
We could easily.
It's a very important issue.
Christine.
Any follow-up? Okay. Illegal immigrants in Massachusetts, what types of services should they qualify for, if any? Driver's licenses, housing vouchers, reduced tuition at state colleges and universities? Peter?
Well, I know you know this is a very hot topic for me. Anything after illegal means nothing. They're illegal. They don't deserve anything. They should not be here. They came into our country illegally, and they are consuming taxes, our own taxes, $1.2 to $1.8 billion a year of the state of Massachusetts residents' taxes go to them so they can live, so they can eat, so they can go to school with in-state tuition. Give me a break on that one, okay? Health care. No, they deserve nothing as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, same question, Tom Coulter.
Well, I think as the state of Arizona will tell you, immigration falls under the category of a federal authority. And I'm very frustrated with our current policy and our lack of a policy on the federal level. But Peter and I differ in the sense that we call them illegal aliens. I mean, we call people names to dehumanize them. These are still human beings, and they should be treated as human beings. The federal government requires that we educate even those here that are undocumented, K through 12. Morality tells us if they come into the emergency room with a heart attack that we should treat them. But in terms of what type of public services they should receive, if they don't pay into them, they shouldn't be receiving from them. But let's be clear. We have non-citizens who are documented immigrants who pay into the fund and who should be eligible to receive from the fund that they pay into it. But I will say publicly right now that I don't support in-state tuition for undocumented or driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants, even though Peter continues to post that I do.
What about housing vouchers?
If they don't pay into the system, they should not receive from the system. But don't confuse that with treating them like they're non-humans. They're still human beings. Right. And I think we should talk about them in that regard.
Okay, Peter, you had a follow-up?
Well, again, Tom will say they're still human beings, yes, but they don't belong here. Okay, well, and they shouldn't be paying in anything because they don't belong here. That's why I said in my open statement, we need to start taking care of our own before we start worrying about other people. And whether it's a federal thing or not, where do you think the federal money comes from? It comes from us also. So they don't belong in this state. They don't belong in this country. Okay? And I will not say politically correct. The illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, you call them what they are. You don't have to make up a word to make it sound nicer.
Okay, Tom?
There is no federal money that flows to Massachusetts from their educational mandate. No federal money whatsoever. It's just an unfunded mandate. And that makes it very difficult, as our friend John Creed would tell us all. Unfunded mandates are a real problem. But the fact of the matter is that we have an immigration problem in America. I had brain surgery 4 years ago, and it was an Israeli doctor who just finished school at Mass General who operated on me. A week later, I went to see him for follow-up, and he was back in Israel because he couldn't get citizenship after his educational visa was up. Those are the type of people we need in this country, people that want to work hard and follow our rules and learn the language. But I refuse to talk about them like they're not human.
Okay. Any other? Kevin Tachi? Question. Sorry, I didn't mean to almost poke you with a pen.
It's okay. Tom, what's your philosophy on tax policy and how does it play a role in economic development, not only in your district but around the Commonwealth?
That's a great question. I wish we could talk about that for hours. As many of you know, I'm a very fiscal conservative guy. I voted against the tech tax, one of only six Democrats that did at the time. I voted against the increase to the sales tax. Didn't think it was good for our economy at the time. But if you look closely, and I'm speaking at the Chamber of Commerce on Friday on this very topic, you look closely on the impact of the voter initiative to lower the income tax from 5.9% to 5.0%. Look closely. I'm a numbers guy. The average person making $50,000 a year saves $450 a year. Who makes $50,000 with that 0.8% reduction? Look at what the result of that has been. A decreased amount of local aid and educational funding over that same period, 14 years, which has resulted in a doubling of people's property taxes. So we save $450, and in many cases, we spend another $4,000 in property taxes. Everybody should look at their property taxes. So tax policy is very important, and politicians have to develop the courage to talk about it.
I need to get a follow-up on that.
Yeah.
You mentioned about voting for the tech tax, but that tech tax was part of a transportation bill. Did you vote for that transportation bill that had that tech tax?
I voted against the amendment that added the tech tax to the transportation bill. I voted for the transportation bill because God knows our infrastructure is broken and needs to be repaired.
Because I thought the tech tax was something that was part of it. It was passed. And then when there was a lot of outcry by companies around the Commonwealth, then a lot of the folks in at the State House said, oh, well, maybe this is a bad idea. And then there was kind of a push to...
You're 100% right. You've got a great memory, but I was one of the six that stood and opposed it from the very beginning.
Okay.
So when it was repealed a month later, it almost looked like I knew what I was talking about.
Okay. Peter, my question to you, where do you stand on tax policy, and how can you affect any type of reform as a member of a party that is woefully outnumbered in the House and Senate?
Well, that is a good question, and I thought I would never, ever say that, because you hear that all the time, because we are outnumbered
in the
State
House.
Just a little bit. Yeah, 160 state reps, and there's 34 of them are Republicans, so yeah, I would say so. But, you know, if we wouldn't need... I'm going to get back to what Tom had said earlier, how he voted not to increase the sales tax, but it did get increased. But he also voted not to reduce it from 6.25% to 5% back in the 2013-2014 session. So, but we need to stop overspending. If we can live within a budget like everybody else does, we're not going to need to have that money, the tax money, to pay for things that we don't. We need to start watching what we spend. As I said at one point, that we spend over $675,000 per mile per year to maintain our roads. Look at our roads. On top of that, there's a $78,000 per mile per year administration cost, which is eight times the national average.
But how can you grow your ideas, your tax ideas, across the aisle? How can you do that?
Well, I'm not saying it's going to be easy. It definitely will be tough, but we have to look at where the money's being. There's a perfect example with the roads. They get all that kind of money, and we have the worst roads that I've seen, and I drive over them every day. You go up Route 1 and try to head up towards Saugus, man, you can't keep your car in the lane. It's so bad up there. So it's not going to be easy. But you got to have common sense come back into this also.
I certainly do. You know, I think you all know me long enough to know that I'm a pretty straight talker, and I do my homework, and I have data to support my arguments. It seems like this is the wacky season of campaigns. And, you know, the playbook gets open, and we talk about, we don't have a revenue problem, we've got a spending problem. For those of you listening out there, our increase in the state budget this year was 1.7%. 1.7. Pretty modest. If you look at the past 14 years, and I don't want to run out of time, if you look at our spending in education, down 14.5%. In the environment, down 46%. Human services, down 10%. Housing, economic development, down 11%. Public safety, post 9/11, down 18%. Local aid, down 51%. So when you talk, now the only thing that's killing us is we've got health care that's up 56%. So when I hear the sound bites during the political season that we've got a spending problem, I wish when you talk about that type of conservative fiscal monitoring, it's incredible that we continue to say this in debates.
Okay. Any follow-up? Charles Mathewson?
I have a bottom line question. Peter, how has Tom called to fill the district?
How has he failed a district? Well, I believe he's voted quite a bit against items that should be serving the residents. Well, not just because everything that we vote on, or he votes on, or any state rep votes on, affects the whole state. So not just his district. But, you know, he's had voted on some of the stuff that should be out there. He voted on underneath the welfare reform bill, a amendment that would require DTA to report on how many legal immigrants are collecting welfare, because they're not supposed to collect welfare until they've been in here for 10 years. You know, he also voted no on a amendment that requires six public hearings before raising taxes and fees so that the members could, you know, talk to more people. He voted against that. Voted against a amendment that required the MBTA pension board to disclose board meeting votes because the board lost $25 million due to a bad investment with a former board member. There's a lot of the votes I said when I was going to come on board about this, I'm going to go with his voting record. Yes, I'm not saying Tom hasn't done anything good, but there's a lot of stuff that affects the residents money-wise.
Okay, Tom, you can't say a thing. How do you respond?
At the risk of sounding cavalier, I'd like to teach Peter something about the legislature. The Republican Party, at which, as you know, I received the nomination of that party a year ago, campaigns year-round. And they do that by casting votes that we have to vote against. And then they use those votes against us in the following election. I'll give you an example. We could be debating transportation and infrastructure. And they'll file an amendment that says, let's give new textbooks to first graders across Massachusetts. Of course, we'll vote against that because it's out of order. And that will show up in the next campaign that we don't like kids, that we don't like students. Peter will learn, if should he ever serve, that there's a game that's played. It's not very statesmanlike. It's not very honest. It's not very much appreciated. But that's how the minority party tries to pick up seats in the next election, by making votes like that part of the record.
Okay, let's get to the district.
I'd love to.
What have you done for the district? Let's forget about politics and the statewide. What have you done for the district?
Well, Charlie, I'm proud to say that I was the first dealing with this opiate epidemic before we even used the term epidemic. In the past 3 years, I've hosted a dozen forums, and I know you've attended some of them, for parents. And that was before we knew we had an epidemic. And I have worked with parents night and day trying to get their kids into treatment centers. I've grabbed the Monpont Pond issue. I'm deeply involved with the Pilgrim Closure issue, which, you know, people said was a town issue of Plymouth. It's not. It's a major regional issue. But more importantly, and what I'm most proud of, is my phone rings every single day from people who need my help. And I'll tell you, it's the greatest joy and the greatest privilege of my life to meet them where they are. They could need a job, they could need food, they could need resources and housing, they could need help for their loved one who's an opiate addict. I love taking that call, and I'm very good at helping address their issues.
Okay, then Peter, how do you respond?
Well, you know, Tom has done the things with the epidemic, the opioid epidemic, but with the drug courts that are in place and the addictions, helping the addicted, which is fine. But to me, that's putting a Band-Aid on a gash. We need to stop the flow of the drugs that are coming in here. We need to enforce the laws when they do get arrested, okay? They're not. They're going to get arrested, and they're going to go in there. Some judge's going to make a deal and give them 6 months probation. Meanwhile, these guys are out there. People are dying every day. Okay, we need to get tougher on the laws. We need to allow the police to do their job, give them the resources. Yes, it's going to cost money, but how many more people do you want to die? How many more people do you want to die? I don't want to see any more. So I want to have the police get the resources. Even if it's one dealer, someone's going to come right afterwards, you come up with a strict law, mandatory, that they go to jail and they don't get out for a while.
Christine?
Okay, no follow-up.
He wants a follow-up.
Tom?
Just very briefly, and I appreciate Peter's passion on that issue, but it's very important to understand in the legislature what our job is, what we can do, and what we can't do. We're not the law enforcement people. We make the laws. It's up to law enforcement to execute and implement those laws. We're not the judicial system, so we can't make decisions with regard to penalties in locking people up. We're not local officials. We can't make decisions at the local level. That's what local officials are elected to do. It's very important to understand what the scope and the breadth of the job is, and it's very important to stay within that box. That's what our Constitution calls for, that types of checks and balances.
Okay, let me just follow up with that right now and ask you that question. What difference will it make to the average voter in your district if you get reelected, Tom Coulter?
Well, thank you, Christine, for that question. First of all, we've made more progress on Monpont Pond in the last 3 years than they've made in the last 54 years. We will continue that work for Halifax. We've made a difference in terms of educating people in the 12th Plymouth District about opiates. We will obviously continue that work as aggressively and as fast as we can. I'm very briefed, and I plan to ask Peter later about the Pilgrim issue. Very important economic development issue, very important tax revenue issue for the town of Plymouth, and it's a very important short-term health and safety problem, long-term storage problem. I've been briefed on all of those issues. I'm working hard on those issues. But probably most importantly, I'm going to go back to it again. We now know how to navigate the government. We know how to work within the government. And when people call us and they need help with the government, my staff, led by Betty DeBenedictis, gets it done, along with my help, faster than anybody in the State House.
Okay. Same question to you, Peter. What difference will it make to the average voter in your district, the 12th Plymouth District, whether you get elected or not to the state rep seat?
Well, you know, a lot of people hear what I have to say, and they agree that, first of all, I'm a believer in term limits, okay? The founding fathers did not expect to have politicians turn into career politicians. Go in and serve your two terms, as Tom Coulter promised when he first ran. Two terms and he's out. Well, here it is going on his sixth term. Okay, and again, I'm not saying Tom hasn't done some good, but a lot of politicians get out there and they start getting a little stagnant and they don't do the job. They come out and say they do this. And I'm going to quote Mark Allegro from a thing we were the other day. He says, they're all going to tell you all their, like in baseball, they're all going to tell you their home runs, but they're not going to tell you their strikeouts. And I thought that was a very cool thing that he said. And that's what it is. They're going to tell you everything great they did, but they're not going to tell you all the bad stuff, the stuff that's not getting done. I don't think Halifax should have been 3 years, 10 years, whatever, however long has been involved. I don't know why, if the problem was prior to 3 years and Tom still had half the district, why he didn't get involved when he had half the district, even though it's not in his district, just like the Plymouth. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, that's fine. Tom, you had something to say.
Yes, I don't go looking for work that's outside my district. I'm busy enough with my 40,000 constituents. But let me talk about career politicians. I didn't join the legislature until I was 48 years old. And after a long career of making payrolls and building businesses, hiring people throughout southeastern Massachusetts and then throughout the country at Clean Harbors, I agree with Peter that people should not be career politicians. But I do believe they should come to the legislature after having earned a perspective based upon real life experience. I came to the legislature at 40 years old. In terms of commitment of two terms, I don't do things like that. In discussions with Peter, used to be on my campaign staff, I'm sure I said I'm going to serve a term at a time. But I know that I serve at the will and at the pleasure of the people in the 40th in the 12th Plymouth District. When it's time for me to go, they will tell me that loud and clear at the ballot box. That's what term limits is in Massachusetts.
Okay, I just want to ask you a quick follow-up. So when you ran the first time, you didn't say that you supported term limits, and you didn't say you would only serve two terms.
Never said that.
Okay.
Never said that.
Make that clear. All right. Let's go to Kevin Tachi.
All right. Can I add a little?
Smile.
You got a
smile.
Because I got a twist here. You get to pick your poison, and we'll start with you, Tom.
Okay.
You get to pick your question by what you choose: weapons or education.
Weapons.
Okay. What's your thought on the Attorney General's action in July regarding the enforcement of the state's assault weapons ban, including a crackdown on the sale of copycat weapons, and do you feel that the state needs more gun laws on the books?
Great question, Kevin. I'd love to do education as well. I was one of the 60 state representatives that wrote to Attorney General Mara Healey telling her that we believe her interpretation was overreaching. This is not about whether you agree with what she did or didn't agree with what she did. To me, this is about her right to do it. As I just talked about, the balance of the checks and balances in government. She's the Attorney General. She's not the legislature. She doesn't get to interpret a current law on the books and add to that law because she thinks it's the right thing to do. We've made that very clear to her. In terms of the current law, Massachusetts has a law that was supported last summer by the Gun Action Owners League, GOAL. That takes a lot of work, a lot of deliberation. It expanded upon the 1994 law, which bans 19 assault weapons in Massachusetts. I'm very proud of that law, and that law is now being passed in states throughout the country. I challenge whether Peter supports the banning of those 19 assault weapons.
Well, Peter, you have a choice. You can either answer the question or you can have a question on education. What would you like?
Well, I'll go with the education because I'm more on the weapons, but I'll try the education.
Okay. How can the state better fund education without raising taxes or cutting more programs?
Oh, that's easy. Get rid of the $1.2 to $1.8 billion we spent on illegal immigrants.
Okay. Well, should the Commonwealth revert back to MCAS or state?
Without a doubt. Get rid of Common Core. We don't need... I'm sorry to cut you off. I didn't mean to do that.
No, that was the end of the question.
Okay. We don't need Common Core. We don't need the federal government coming in to tell us how we need to teach our children. We don't need any more government intrusion into our lives. And that's what's happening. Right now, you know that there's supposed to be a bill up on the State House where they're going to pass... they're going to talk about having... You're only able to have 600 pounds of trash a year. And that pass is going to come in July 1st of 2018. So now they're going to tell you how to have your how much trash you can use, how much trash you can throw away. You know what? We need to get them out. Let's go back to a small government, stable government, and then get back and let the people of Massachusetts do what they're supposed to be doing and be able to have their lives, try to get them, if they want a small business or they want to work. But stop intrusion on our rights.
Okay. Just a quick follow-up, and then we're going to go to the lightning round.
It's just a very quick question, Christine. Peter talks about the $1.8 billion in every forum we're at. We were at a forum in Duxbury the other day, and Congressman Keating turned around to me when Peter said that and said, where does he get that number? So I'd love to ask him, where do you get that number?
I get it from my political advisor. I've heard Mark Lombardo use it
Well, there's a credible source.
Hey, he's a state rep, so, I mean, you know, I really shouldn't get down on somebody like that.
Do you want to use that as one of your questions to ask each other?
No, I'm going to ask about guns later.
There you go. Okay, let's go to lightning round first. Just a reminder, you're listening to 95.9 FM, WATD in Marshfield, the South Shore's news and information station. This is a political forum, and it is the 12th Plymouth District. Lightning round. The answers are either yes or no, or two sentences tops. Lightning round question. Charles Mathewson.
When driving, do you listen to audiobooks, podcasts, music, or radio? Tom.
I listen to public radio, WBUR.
I listen to my Pandora.
Okay. So no WATD listeners. You may both leave the
room
now.
Just going to say that.
Okay, there you go.
Oh, you didn't ask about drive time, Charles.
Oh, you say off time either. I listen to Wild World of Blues all the time.
Turn off the lights.
Yeah.
Well, not all the time, but...
Well, 10 at night till 2 in the morning.
Yeah, there you go.
Remember, you can only listen to so much news, Charles. Then I go right to WATD.
All right. Enough of the brown nosing.
like a typical politician.
Name one initiative or particular reason why you would vote to raise taxes. You get 1 to 2 sentences.
Yeah. I wouldn't raise taxes. I've signed a pledge not to raise taxes.
Same question, Tom.
I would never sign any pledge without listening to my constituents.
But again, I'm saying name one initiative or particular reason why you would vote to raise taxes.
Fix
one.
Fixing the 37 bridges that our children drive over every day that are structurally broken.
So, Peter, there's no reason why you would raise taxes at all?
Nope. We already paid too much.
Okay. Charles?
Think of the presidential candidates who didn't make it past the primaries, everyone but Clinton and Trump. Of those, who would you prefer? Tom?
On which side, the Democrat or the Republican side?
Either.
John Kasich.
Peter?
What was your answer?
John Kasich.
Oh, okay. Cruz. I was a Ted Cruz supporter.
Okay. Plymouth County government, for or against it? Peter Bonsack.
I'm for it.
Okay.
Enthusiastically.
Okay. Kevin?
If a bill to reinstate the death penalty is ever put forth, would you support such legislation? Yes or no?
Tom. No.
That's Tom. Peter?
Yes, as long as it was proven 100%.
Okay. Charles Mathewson?
If you had the following career choice, would you prefer to be a writer or an actor? Tom.
A writer.
I'd say a writer.
Kevin?
Do you have confidence in the state's current economy or lack confidence, Tom?
I have great confidence in the state's
lack
current economy.
Of
Peter?
Lack, I'm sorry, lack.
Okay, one more lightning round question, Charles Mathewson.
Okay, my favorite one this year.
He's got an evil smile.
He does have an evil smile.
Next question.
When driving, have you ever stopped to yell at someone who hasn't stopped for an ambulance, Tom?
My son is a medic, so I absolutely have.
Peter?
My son's an EMT, and I have.
Okay. All right, now I want to go to the portion of the evening when you get a chance to ask each other questions. So, Peter, do you have a question for Tom Coulter?
You know, the other day we were at PAC TV doing a recording, and Tom said he wasn't ready, and this time I'm not ready. So, I know my time's going, so I got to take care for a second.
I can give you one, Peter.
You want to give me one?
No, you can question for me.
Yeah. So, you obviously, as you said earlier, that you don't, you're going to be there as long as the people vote you in. But you had never said, again, I'm just going to reiterate, you have never said that I will only be in for 2 terms like the founding fathers and I'm out.
Certainly not that I recall, Peter. If you could correct me, I'd be interested in that.
I only say that because I've done a lot of door knocking. I've had multiple people tell me that. I never heard Tom say it, but I had multiple people telling me that.
I think there are people that wish I left after two terms.
Okay, Tom, do you have a question for Peter Bonson?
Yes, I'm going to go back to the assault weapon ban, weapons of mass destruction. Massachusetts has got a law on the books that is being used and universally applied in states across the country. It includes the ban on 19 assault weapons. And I don't want Peter to think I'm talking about AR-15s, because I'm not. I'm talking about 19 assault weapons. My question is, Peter, do you support the ban on assault weapons in Massachusetts?
Can you tell me what assault weapons they are?
No, I get to ask the question. The 19 assault weapons that are listed in the state law with respect to assault weapons.
Well, I don't know what the 19s are listed.
Let's assume it's one assault weapon. Do you agree it should be banned?
If it's a weapon that continually fires when you pull the trigger, when you pull the trigger, the only people who should have them is the military or some police forces.
So that would be a yes.
That would be a
yes. Assault weapon ban.
As long as it was an automatic weapon, yes, they do not belong in the hands of regular people.
I'm really happy to hear that.
Okay, all right. What we're going to do now is we're going to go to our closing statements, and again, remember, it can be as long as 2 minutes, but cannot be any longer than that, and it can be shorter than that. That if you care, we're going to flip the order around. This time, we're going to go to Tom Coulter, then to Peter Bonsack with your closing statements.
Well, thank you, Christine and Kevin and Charles, for hosting this political forum, and thank you, Peter, for engaging in our civic process. That's what makes democracy work. To my constituents and the listening audience tonight, I've been honored to serve as your state representative for 10 years. Because of you and the faith that you have placed in me, this has been the most rewarding experience of my career. Through my constituent service and legislative agenda, I'm humbled by the support I receive from Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, and Independents every day. I'm further delighted to have received the endorsements of the Massachusetts AFL-CIO, Massachusetts Teachers Association, SEIU Healthcare Workers, and the IBEW, just to name a few. As your state representative, I hope to continue my work toward improving the lives of our citizens, one person at a time, and through the deliberation of public policy. To learn more about my candidacy, I invite you to visit tomcoulter.com. I know I serve at your pleasure. Therefore, I humbly ask for your vote on November 8th.
Thank you very much. That was Tom Coulter. He's the incumbent and a Democrat. Now his Republican challenger, Peter Bonsack.
Thank you, Christine. Again, WATD and Charles and Kevin and Amy. And Tom, too. I'm really enjoying this debate or forum type of thing here. So.
I do as well, Peter.
But, again, the reason why is I'm running. So when I see things I don't like, I'm going to get involved in it. And, you know, I'm going to want to go back to some of the things that, you know, Tom has voted on that, again, that I would not have voted on. But I will first say that the Citizens of Little Taxation Organization gave Tom a 27. From 0 to 100, 100 being the best, they rated him at 27. So, I mean, 73% of the time, in their opinion, he's voting against the residents for taxes. We also had, like, the Sunlight Foundation released an open legislation data report card in March of 2013. Massachusetts was given an F in the report. The report card evaluated how adequate, complete, and accessible legislative data was to the general public. They got an F on that, okay? There's not enough transparency out there at the State House. You know, people should be able to go online and find out what a state rep is voting on, just voted on, whatever. But there's so many things up there that, you know, it's hard to get it in a two-minute time span. But, again, I'm a believer in term limits. I think Tom's had his run, and I think it's time to bring in some new blood, new eyes, new ears. And people who are going to be there will be more conservative because, you know, I'm tired and a lot of other people are tired of paying their taxes till May 5th. And, of course, that's including federal taxes. But people want to see a change. For the people I've talked to, they want a change. We need a change. And although I think Tom is a good guy. I like Tom personally. It is time. It is time for a change. It's time to get some new people in there. And we need to bring it so at least we get a fair playing ground up there with the Democrats and the Republican.
Thank you very much. That was your closing statement. That's Peter Bonsack, the Republican, running in the 12th Plymouth District. And, of course, we're going to have this entire forum up on our website probably by tomorrow morning. Selected cuts you'll be hearing tomorrow morning on election night, which is Tuesday, November 8th, we will have reporters out in the field. I have my political posse here. We'll bring you the results just as soon as they come in. And as we tell you, remember, if you don't vote, you don't have a voice. So get out there and vote. We'll take a quick break, and then we're going to go to our next contestants slash combatants. I like that. I got that from you guys. Thank you very much again, Tom Coulter and Peter Bonsack. We'll be back right after this. Thank you.